Does ESG go too far or not far enough? This is the Issues Watch podcast. Hi, I'm Don Meyer, Chief Marketing Officer at the New Jersey Society of CPAs, and welcome to the Issues Watch podcast. The tale of ESG in corporate America is one of an extraordinary rise. Less than a decade ago, barely anyone outside the impact investing world used the term ESG, which stands for environmental, social, and governance issues. Today, the acronym is everywhere in corporate America. But almost as quickly as it came, ESG began to face criticism from all sides. Companies and CEOs are being accused of going too far or not doing enough. Executives have gotten quieter about their sustainability efforts, but as the pullback on talking about climate and equity issues slowed action within companies. Here with me to discuss the anti-ESG movement is Andrew Winston, an advisor, speaker, and author, and one of the world's leading thinkers on sustainable business strategy. Welcome, Andrew.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start with the basics. Please define ESG for our listeners and viewers and describe why it matters to investors and other stakeholders.
Look, ESG is just an acronym. It means environmental, social, and governance. It's used mainly in the financial community, that particular acronym, to describe the what people have called non-financial, the things that fall outside of, in theory, kind of direct profits and cash that affect a business's value and affect kind of the risk of the business. And the financial world uses it mainly as an indication of will environmental and social issues and governance, which is, you know, how do they manage these issues? Does that affect the value of the business? Is it a risk to the company? And that is kind of different from the larger idea of just sustainability, where companies are pursuing environmental and social aims. They're trying to solve environmental and social problems in the world and really look at their role in society and their impact on the world. They're distinct things, but they get muddied. And there's kind of a blurry use of the language in between, and ESG has started to be used in a lot of companies to kind of mean the larger thing. So when we talk about ESG, we have to at least get into what are we talking about in the moment right now? What are we really talking about?
So speaking of that blurriness, does ESG refer to a company's corporate social responsibility agenda or a long-term profit strategy, or could it be both?
Yeah, it can be both. I mean, the CSR, or corporate social responsibility, is still used, but it's kind of a dated term when, you know, the idea of, you know, maybe looking at your environmental impacts or your impacts on communities or your supply chains was seen as mainly or entirely philanthropy. It was just, you know, am I a responsible citizen? Which is still a valid question. Responsibility is something we all have to deal with as an individual in our communities, and companies do as well. But sustainability, again, has been a really much broader concept about how the company navigates the world and how it grows and profits. And the work I've done for, you know, 20 plus years is to help companies understand that sustainability is a pretty powerful path to value creation and profit and growth. It drives innovation. It helps you cut costs. It helps you manage risk, which is, again, what the ESG focus is largely about. And it helps you manage your brand, you know, build brand value and tangible value in the world. And these are really powerful value drivers. So it is a much larger concept. So when people say ESG and they're talking about this larger idea, then yeah, they're talking about, in some sense, the company's business model and how it makes money.
Okay. So I think when ESG started to gain a lot of attention, let's say a couple of years ago, I think there's a lot of excitement amongst CPAs and within the accounting world about the concept. But in the last couple of years, we've seen lawmakers, policymakers, critics kind of turn against ESG to some extent on both sides. So what do you think is fueling this anti-ESG movement?
Well, I should just quickly say that there's a lot of different kinds of anti-ESG. You know, I've written about this recently and kind of thought about it a lot over the last year, that there are people, you know, kind of, and there's kind of two big groups that really, I think, affect this discussion. There are people who are anti-ESG in the sense that They don't really love the way the financial world's using it. They think it's what they call greenwashing. They actually do want to see more sustainable outcomes and companies do things like reduce their carbon footprint and manage human rights in their supply chain. But they think the use of it as an investment screen has been kind of a smokescreen, right? And it's been hiding, you know, not real activity. The other big bucket, and is the one that gets the most kind of press coverage, is the more political. It's, you know, represented by people like the governor of Florida, you know, legislatures, pundits, you know, on news networks that are saying something much broader. When they say anti-ESG, they'll use it often interchangeably with anti-woke. They believe ESG is a particularly progressive agenda, you know, a political agenda, and they make the case that companies, you know, shouldn't be engaging in these discussions or shouldn't be focused on environmental and social issues, you know, because the company should only focus on shareholder value. Which, by the way, again, my work for 20 years has been making the case that there is no shareholder value without managing your stakeholders. I mean, it's kind of silly in a way to think you're going to have shareholder value without satisfying customers or attracting and retaining the talent that you need or working in your communities. So it is, I think, the driver of the most focused on part of anti-ESG has been political, and has been in a way to score points, in a way to get into battles. And the most famous battle here is between the state of Florida and Disney over the last couple of years. And we can dive into what that has looked like and why it happened. But I think that's been the kind of quintessential example of this anti-ESG movement.
And I think, at least from the CPA perspective, the ESG movement seemed to be a great way to mitigate risk, or to, you know, CPAs are inherently risk averse. And so ESG seemed sort of right in the sweet spot for CPAs. Has there been any connection made by those who are opposed to ESG on that kind of, as you put it, you know, the anti-woke idea? Have they connected ESG to declines in profits, or have they connected it to anything concrete, or is it really, as you said, really more about just kind of politics?
Yeah, look, there's always people making the case that ESG is a drag on earnings. You know, and we could talk about this kind of philosophically in a second about the idea of what are earnings and what's a drag on earnings, but there's been many studies, also kind of meta studies looking at studies of studies, that have shown ESG funds have outperformed. They certainly did in the early couple of years of the pandemic. You know, part of that is because they're heavy weighted in tech. ESG funds tend to be weighted in tech because there's a perception they have a smaller footprint. You know, it doesn't have oil and gas. And then the invasion of Ukraine made the price of gas go up, and all of a sudden the oil and gas companies were worth a lot more. So ESG didn't outperform, which to me just shows that it's not really the right question, I think, does it outperform? Because it's not something we really ask about almost any other investment thesis. You don't say, here's a new tech fund, here's a biotech fund, here's an AI fund. Will it always outperform? Because if we knew it always outperformed, all the money in the market would go to it. There's no guarantees, right? This is a strategy. This is a screen. It started earlier years, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, as just kind of a negative screen, you know, no weapons, no tobacco, that kind of thing. And it's become something much broader, and is looking at how environmental issues and social issues can really create risk for a business. And it recognizes that something like climate change is real, it's happening, and it's impacting companies in very, sometimes very expensive ways in value chains. If they have, you know, parts of their value chain that are reliant on heavy energy intensive products, then if there's a move away from those or a cost on carbon, it affects their business prospects. So it's very, very real. I think it has evolved and has been seen more as a good screen on risk. Companies that don't govern under the governance model, they don't govern well, they're riskier. They are, right? And so I think CPAs who are risk averse, I think ESG fits that model pretty well. It's another lens on how well is a company managed? Are they managing their big issues? And acknowledges that companies are not separate from the planet or the people on it, that these are integrated issues. And so companies are in the middle of these challenges we face. And if they don't manage them well, they can destroy value.
And I guess the spotlight on ESG is very similar to the spotlight on another three letters, DE&I. I read last week that there are some who are blaming the recent Boeing airplane accident with the door blowing out on DE&I efforts. So, I mean, I guess there's a lot. You can politicize anything if you really wanted to. But last September, Walmart Chief Sustainability Officer Kathleen McLaughlin said that the term ESG has become a boogeyman. So has this ESG backlash slowed action within companies?
So I think there's two things in your question. Has it slowed action? It's hard to say. I mean, we should step back for a second and recognize that the crux or the core of the anti-ESG movement is definitely in America, right? And I travel the world. I speak all over the world. I talk to companies regularly. They're aware of it. It is affecting their discussions, but it is not exactly their problem. You know, I've heard a Japanese CEO recently said, we're still using ESG. It's fine here. So it's been an American phenomenon, and there's been a much bigger divide in the last couple of years between the US and EU in particular, because the EU is continuing to pass laws that require transparency and measurement and metrics and reporting around these issues. So on that score, it can't really slow down from the reporting side, because there's just more and more laws. A multinational, you know, unless they're just based here, multinationals are facing way more regulation. And by the way, California has passed similar laws on you have to report on your carbon emissions, for example. So you have to do more. But the more important question to me is it slowing the real action, you know, the action to tackle climate change, for example? And I'd say it hasn't really, because, you know, imagine you started to decarbonize your business, you're doing retrofits at factories, you're buying renewables. You're not going to stop because the governor of Florida is mad. Like, it's you've got too much capital engaged, you've already made the change. And you're changing because, frankly, it's cheaper, it's profitable, right? Nobody is really doing a lot of renewables for their sustainability report. They're doing it because it's cheaper, and it's good business. And by the way, it lowers risk. You know your energy costs, basically, if you've bought a power purchasing agreement, which is the kind of financial model for buying, say, renewables for your business. So I don't think it's really slowed that. I think the DEI and some of the social side is harder to call. Because the thing that has definitely happened is this phenomenon that some call green hushing, where companies are just talking less about sustainability. And I think in particular on the social side, right? Because the supposed cautionary tales of Target or Bud Light or Disney have been around social issues, those in particular around LGBTQ issues. And so you'll see companies, again, in America, talking a little less. That can't be good for movement on big kind of systemic issues, because we're not going to get very far unless we're talking about them together. But behind the scenes at the clients I work with and companies I talk to, the work's still going on. It remains to be seen how much of a kind of hangover there is from this attack on taking these issues into account in your business.
Well, I mentioned earlier that CPAs play a critical role in the assurance of ESG information. You mentioned the article you wrote recently for Harvard Business Review titled "ESG is Under Attack: How Should Your Company Respond?" CPAs can represent dozens, hundreds, even thousands of companies. So how do you think that CPAs should respond to the criticism of ESG reporting?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's much to respond to, right? It's just so much of it's legally required now. And then there's also a really powerful de facto regulation in the works, which is companies asking their supply chain more and more questions and wanting the data. And over time, increasingly, of course, wanting it to be assured, wanting to know that there's quality control, because, and part of that, again, is regulatory. You got companies that know Europe's asking for them to measure their what's called scope 3 carbon emissions, which is the emissions of their suppliers and their customers. So they're asking questions, but this set of questions and pressure on suppliers has been going on for a long time, long before the new regulations. It's more and more that companies want to understand the impacts across their value chain. They want to know where there's risk, right? Like if they don't know fully if their supply chain is at risk of big storms or wildfires in particular regions, then they could discover real losses to their business. So they're asking more and more questions. And I think those are coming no matter what happens with regulation. There's just too much reason for companies to want to get a handle on their impacts up and down their value chain. It's too good for their business and you know, for controlling risk. So I don't think there's any avoiding this, really. I know it's frustrating to some companies, I mean, to all companies. There's so many more questions. I think what we're discovering and going to discover pretty quickly is that, you know, this non-financial reporting or whatever you call it is just vastly understaffed, right? So the CPAs have to do a lot. Mm-hmm. Right now it's sitting on the chief sustainability officer or something like that. But I'll just give you one statistic. I was in Copenhagen doing work, and an industry association there had calculated a few months ago that they believe that the non-financial reporting will require as many people and as much investment as financial reporting, which, if that's even remotely true, says we're like millions of people short on non-financial reporting. If you think about the entirety of CFO offices, CPAs, government people, right, markets, I don't think that's probably true at that scale, but it's what they're saying is it's vastly understaffed right now. I think there's an interim stage here where people are going to be pretty overworked in certain parts of this equation, including, I assume, CPAs, until we kind of get the right amount of investment in this.
Well, from a revenue perspective, I'm sure firms will be happy to hear what you just said. But from a staffing perspective, that probably sent shivers down the spines of many of a managing partner, because the profession's already struggling with bringing new people into the profession as it is.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I hear that in a lot of sectors, actually. There's a lot
The baby boomers were, you know, they were big in accounting and a lot of other areas. And with their exodus, it's causing problems across the board. So.
I've heard that in construction, tradesmen, there's not enough people. Like I have 20 and 17-year-old. Young people, they want to be influencers now. Like, that's an actual, like, survey show. Like, half of them want to be an influencer, which is when I feel old, that I can't see that's a job necessarily. It is for a very select few, right? It's like, I'm going to be a movie star, you know, like there's a handful that make a lot of money doing this, but it's not easy. But I think, yeah, there's a bunch of professions where we don't seem to have, I think, a kind of impetus for younger people to go. And maybe, you know, maybe AI is going to help fill some of those gaps.
It's supposed to take away some of the lower level tasks for accountants so they can focus on the higher level tasks like ESG. I did have one last question about ESG. It seems like anytime this is not new to you necessarily, but for others, ESG, relatively new concept. And it always seems like when something new gets introduced, there's usually, I'll use the word excitement again, around it, but then usually the pendulum swings in the other direction. I mean, was the pushback on ESG, was it just inevitable? Like, there's pushback on just about every new thing that comes around these days?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying is just inherently true, you know, that there's always... Look, part of my view on this is that this expansion of different groups that are anti-ESG with different arguments is a sign that sustainability is here to stay and is winning, right? You wouldn't see this much frustration or anger or pushback if it weren't a big deal, right? If it weren't changing the way business is done or changing the way businesses have to think about their purpose and think about reporting and the data they collect, all of it. So clearly, you know, and I do believe this, that sustainability is now on the agenda at every large company in the world, and it's not going away. And to be clear, the drivers of that are actually not, you know, some liberal plot or some politicians. The drivers of that are really much more fundamental. It's things like the climate is changing and fundamentally, and it's dangerous and expensive. It's things like generational shifts, generational norms. It's really clear from surveys and anecdotal and people just talking to their kids that young millennials, Gen Z, have very strong opinions about the challenges in the world. Globally, global surveys show that, you know, young people are concerned about climate. It's like their number one concern over war and, you know, technology and AI. So this is just a generational shift in what's expected of companies that younger people buy from and work for. And those younger people now, by the way, millennials aren't as young as they used to be. They're hitting 40. They're half the workforce, right? So this is happening because it's a fundamental shift. Just like now, everybody knows they have to get some handle on AI. This is kind of permanent, right? And so there's going to be pushback. There's going to be backlash. I don't think it's going to get very far in the end, because the economics behind this, the logic behind it for, you know, value creation for business is just too strong. And just the sense that we'd like to, you know, survive and thrive on this planet that we're endangering. It isn't some separate issue that the planet's in trouble. That's our home. I mean, it's weird to have to say that out loud, but, you know, if we're not protecting that, there's not going to be very good business. I say only half kiddingly that, you know, in cities that are underwater or too hot to live in, there's not a lot of economy going on there, right? That's not going to be good for business. And that's why we're dealing with these issues. They're real, and they're very valuable if we manage them, and very risky and costly if we don't.
Right. And just to tie back to the staffing comment I made earlier, all the research has shown that those new professionals, young professionals that you mentioned, they want to work for companies that share their values.
Right.
So if ESG, sustainability, however you want to phrase it, is important to these potential hires, it better be important to the companies that want to hire them.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So I, as we've been talking about this in the language, I want to give you one quote from I saw late last year that was great, from the CEO of Coca-Cola. James Quincy said, you know, if ESG becomes toxic as a phrase, it doesn't matter. I'm just going to stop saying ESG. My strategy is constant and clear and centered around the business and the things that consumers care about and that fix societal problems. If people want to attach labels to it, that's their issue. Business will be great if we fix these problems, and it will be good for shareholders and good for society. Like, that's kind of a perfect description to me of, you know, why I think companies are kind of continuing on. And again, even if they don't necessarily completely believe it themselves as leaders, they know their young employees and consumers care, right? And that's a good enough reason, you know, if for no other.
And as a lifetime Coca-Cola drinker, I would expect that type of wisdom from the CEO of Coca-Cola. Andrew, this has been really interesting. We really appreciate your time. We'll have to have you back to talk about this and other issues a little bit more often. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening and watching. For ESG-related articles, resources, and events, visit njcpa.org/hub/ESG. And you can learn more about Andrew, access his blog, and find out about the executive education he offers at andrewwinston.com.